There's been unusual turbulence this past month in Hong Kong, which many thousands of us regard as our favourite Asian destination. And given that this territory is such an experiment, really, in supposed co-governance with mainland China just next door, it makes any developments worth watching for wider implications. This week came quite a development. A retired High Court judge, Wu Kwok-hing, announced that he'll stand as a candidate for chief executive, due to be voted upon by select groups of Hong Kongites in quite complex arrangements next March. Mr. Wu said he believed the community had become too polarised and fragmented, and that his background as a barrister and judge with no political baggage, quotes, meant he'd be in a better position to help resolve matters than the incumbent CY Leung. Now, no one seems to know yet how the Xi Jinping government in Beijing feels about this. Then there was also a skirmish recently over two elected Legislative Council members calling for independence for the territory, which Beijing must hate. They actually declared, these two, publicly they wouldn't swear allegiance to China. They weren't allowed to take their seats. And this coming week, the Hong Kong High Court is passing a verdict on it all. So is this experiment sustainable? Well, Jeremy Barmay is joining us to offer some of his experienced judgment. He's Emeritus Professor of Chinese History and was founding director of the Australian Centre on China and the World at the ANU. He's speaking to us from his new home in New Zealand. Welcome back to Saturday Extra, Jeremy.
Morning, Geraldine.
Can you help us make sense of these developments? What do they matter beyond Hong Kong?
Well, they do indeed. I've just been contemplating, because I lived in Hong Kong in the 70s and 80s and have worked there, and much of the work of me and many people involved with Chinese thought and culture and the revival of capitalism in the mainland have all had an origin in Hong Kong. It's been a place that's not only a testing ground for this one country, two systems, but it's been the place that helped China reinvent itself in the last 30 years. So it's a very important place. But I wonder, are we not seeing it something like a Chexit? A China exit type of environment here. Look at the elements that we have involved. We have a Hong Kong population who feel that they are being economically exploited, that the wealthy elites of China and elsewhere are buying up land and making it impossible for people to buy apartments. They're imposing an education system and a language, Mandarin as opposed to Cantonese, which local people find offensive. They've imposed a law that originally seemed to retain elements of Hong Kong's traditional legal system, the British judicial independence, but they're changing that in favour of a massive continental economic political arrangement vis-a-vis the EU. And local people have found various ways in the last 5 years, over textbooks, over the umbrella movement, and then through elections, to oppose and express their opposition. Mainland China, which is in a complete control, it signed a document agreeing to Hong Kong remaining unchanged for 50 years.
Now, this is this one country, two systems. I was just going to say, you maybe should remind people of what that is.
So in 1997, when Hong Kong was handed back to China by the British, it turned Hong Kong from a colony into a territory, but themselves had failed to democratize Hong Kong, a fatal error on their part. And the mainland Chinese promised a high level of independence for Hong Kong for 50 years without any change to its system. However, within their document, the basic law that governs Hong Kong, there are items that indicate that in the end it's the Chinese mainland constitution and its stipulations that will rule Hong Kong. And this is the fatal problem for Hong Kong, because within the Chinese constitution, everything else in the constitution is overridden by Article 1, which speaks of the four basic principles: rulership of the Communist Party, the Marxist-Leninist worldview, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but that's 2047. I mean, who knows what's going to be happening in 2047?
Well, we're not going to get to 2047. The big concern for Hong Kong, enlightened and interested Hong Kong voters, from normal workers and students to professionals and others, is we're not going to get that far, because the mainland will impose its rule more and more directly. And that's where we really see the clash today. The minutiae are very complex. And we have a system, as you said, in next week we'll discover whether these two LegCo members, who were not allowed to swear an oath because their oath was unacceptable, whether the local legal system will allow them to become members of LegCo, although they've already been voted in democratically.
I mean, it's a very, very important decision for these.
Crucial. Yeah, it touches on the very nature of what is the legal independence of Hong Kong. Sadly, the judiciary of Hong Kong, there's no separation of powers. although everyone acts as though there is. In fact, the Hong Kong legislature and the legal system are both beholden to the People's Republic of China, the National People's Congress, and the Chinese constitution, which means that Beijing can overrule any of the things we've been discussing.
So, and the British agreed to that, did they?
They did, but they were all offered this is a classic contractual game. You agree to everything, but when to the time comes, you begin to change the ground rules. And this is what's been happening in Hong Kong over time. And what we have now is, see, all of this happened under Jiang Zemin, Deng Xiaoping, and Hu Jintao, who had now we look back at them, seemed Communist Party leaders who seem quite mild compared to Mr. Xi Jinping, who's a real centralizer and who's a hardliner of the kind we see in Turkey or Russia, India or Japan. This is it's a zeitgeist and also a very practical matter for rulership in China, because if Hong Kong goes its own way, all the local people are allowed to express their popular will against that of the People's Republic of China, it spells doom for many of Xi Jinping's hopes and policies.
Yeah, but by the same token, I would have thought he was a bit hemmed in too, because the world will watch, and they did watch when their whole umbrella demonstrations were on, those 3 months really when the place was sort of held to ransom by particularly young demonstrators, some of whom have come into this LegCo. So, I mean, he's got to also be careful if he cares about his international status. He can't be moving like Tiananmen, can he?
He certainly can't. Also, people in Taiwan are watching. People involved in the South China Sea and the East China Sea are watching. People are watching also as to what type of rulership will China offer if it truly becomes a global power. Therefore, how it behaves has global ramifications and of interest to all of us. And this is why the visit of democracy activists to various countries talking about Hong Kong, it seems like such a minor thing and their interests so minor. But in fact, it touches on the global future of China in our lives.
Now, there's been no word from Beijing about the nomination of this man, Mr. Wu, Professor Wu. How do you imagine they'd be reacting?
Well, I presume, and many better informed people than me have been thinking that for the last number of months there's been a debate about should they keep on the present chief executive, Si Wai Leung, who's really polarized the society, and through his hardline approach to textbook revision, to the umbrella movement and local democratization, and even obeying the basic law, has actually made things in Hong Kong much worse. Therefore, this Mr. Wu coming out as a judge wanting to participate, he's doing it not only for his own interest, but he's probably completely sincere in hoping to see that Hong Kong's future is vouchsafed. Beijing will have to calculate. Do we go with the hard line, or do we find some more moderate person who can help us, give us breathing space, give us time to try and impose our will in softer ways? And here we have the classic soft, hard line, good cop, bad cop situation. And China is not used to doing this. It's not used to compromise. It's not used to giving in. It's used to formalistic compliance, even though it will allow great latitude locally. And this issue of the oath, me swearing an oath, and the two of the people swearing the oath.
Well, that oath in itself was a fresh development, as I read it. The whole notion of swearing a public oath anyway.
Exactly. And so the communists have created a huge problem for themselves by using this oath. And so the young legislators decided to use the word instead of Zhongguo, China. They use the old Japanese imperial colonial term, China. And that, of course, inflamed the situation, and the LegCo people said, you can't swear an oath using that word. Ridiculous.
Well, indeed, again, just to sort of try to unravel this a little bit, the Brookings Institution, we noticed, gave a very interesting view of why Hong Kong politics were getting even more dramatic. And they said, in Chinese culture, the dichotomy between symbols and substance is not clear-cut. In a profound way, symbols and ritual are substance, which gave a little bit of extra element, I suppose, to this notion of the oath.
Well, and this is, I think it's a fantastic point. They're absolutely spot on. And it's something all of us dealing with China, if we're smart, learn quite early on. If we're not clever, we think, oh, that's just words. It doesn't matter. They're rational actors. They don't care about that. That's face. Doesn't really concern us. They're absolutely right, because state ritual and reality are often exactly the same thing, in a way that is virtually unheard of in any other political environment. And therefore, this oath, sadly, has now become the focus of all the political concerns, or many political concerns in Hong Kong today, where it wouldn't have been if the Chinese hadn't pressed this matter.
Who might be a potential candidate then? I see Regina Ip, who's also a member, I think she's a pro-Chinese member of the LegCo. She's confirmed she's interested in running, and there's quite a bit of speculation that the Financial Secretary, John Sang Chun Hua, will also run. Now, would either of them be candidates that Beijing would be happy about?
We don't know. They might be. We don't know if they're invested in Siu Ailun to see him continue. I recently spoke with Martin Lee and Anson Chan, leading democracy activists in China. They visited New Zealand, where they were snuffed by the local government. And they visited Australia, where they were given a wonderful reception by Julie Bishop and others. And they said the future of Hong Kong really pivots on this decision. And if Siu Ailun is kept on, they see doom and gloom. The other candidates are all people who might be acceptable to Beijing, but what will Beijing itself become? It, after all, has been moving in a very negative direction vis-a-vis system reform, democratization, political change, but therefore they might not want anybody who's even vaguely compromising. But if they don't compromise, then their future in Hong Kong will come under question and there'll be greater and greater social tensions.
Of course, it's only for 5 years, a term, which is nothing in Chinese framework, is it?
But it's also the next, it's the next era of Xi Jinping's own rule.
True.
It's his second term. The Chinese mainlanders also are convinced, true or not, that Americans and others are using Hong Kong to foment trouble in there so as to make China's plans in East and South China difficult.
Well,
that's a whole other element and dimension of the problem.
And of course, this week we did have President Xi Jinping further consolidating his own power and position within the Communist Party, declaring him their core leader this week. So that's another development that everybody was wondering whether he'd really get that through.
No, indeed, and he has. And 3 years ago, I was one of the first people to say we're going to see him go for an extra term to stay on to, one, resolve Hong Kong and completely absorb it into China, and two, to take Taiwan. Neither of which aims, I believe, are personally easily achievable, nor particularly desirable, because this touches on the very nature of all politics. How do you deal with diverse opinion? How do you deal with marginal opinion? How do you deal with difference in a rational way that helps your society develop, grow, and evolve into something more mature? China is faltering over these issues.
Jeremy Barmé, thank you very much indeed. And we've lost you to New Zealand, have we?
Yes, I'm afraid so. I did come back.
It's lovely to have you join us again. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Jeremy Barmé, who is was the founding director, and you know he's been a guest on this program several times, the Australian Centre on China and the World at the Australian National University. And for those of you who do travel to Hong Kong, I'd love to hear from you. I really would, as to whether you've noticed nuances of change that you'd care to nominate.